Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical anti-capitalist approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Everyone, welcome to the 86th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Today, I'm looking forward to sharing with you this really important conversation with Metzli Wolf from Revolutionary Mystic. Metzli is a tarot reader, a hoodoo practitioner, a psychic medium, an animal communicator, and so much more, and they have started a wolf sanctuary in the last year in northeastern Washington. So I really wanted to talk to them about this, as, you know, a lot of us are thinking a lot about climate change and about colonialism and about fascism and how exactly we can ground into our unique talents and skills to fight these constructs in ways that feel aligned and appropriate with us. So all that said, you know, and I love every conversation I have. I love all of my guests. I invite them on because I think they're all brilliant. And I know that we talk about a lot of heavy topics on the podcast a lot. You know, this is like a big content warning pretty much all the time on the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, because I am Plutonian, and these are the times that we live in. And, you know, some of us are neurodivergent and can't do the small talk thing. But I digress, and I don't think I need to defend my work to y'all because you're here and listening. But I'm kind of prefacing this because if you are someone that deals with eco grief, you know, this immense and devastating feeling in your chest of being completely powerless to the state of the world and the state of water and endangered species and climate change in general, this conversation can be hard because it can trigger those feelings of powerlessness as we think about how our former president of this so-called nation passed so many devastating environmental bills or ended restrictions on endangered species such as the native wolf. So I'm really grateful for what Metzli's doing and really excited to support them. And I hope you will join me in supporting their important work in this world, and also giving everyone a chance to learn a little bit about what's happening to native wolves if you weren't already aware of it. So please consider making a donation to Metzli's Wolf Sanctuary, joining their Patreon, booking a reading with them, etc., to support this really important work of decolonization and direct action, is really what I think about it when we choose to center our lives around an issue that means a lot to us. We are currently on the eve of the full moon in Leo, and this one is always really notable to me, this axis, I should say, because it is the we versus me axis, and we are in the lover's year. So we're thinking about the ways that we connect with one another, the ways that we communicate, the way that we're able to learn from one another and share experience and grow through love, through communication, through support. Because again, the lover's is associated with Gemini. So it really is about that understanding, that sharing of knowledge, that communication. So with all that said, how do we navigate a full moon in Leo in a lover's year? And I think this is a really good time to reflect on privilege, reflect on status, a word that I really hate, but just the way that we show up in community. And I definitely think about that all the time, y'all. Like, I definitely think about my relationship to others, like how I'm working on myself, like how my trauma might be showing up unhealed, my own projections, the projections I receive from others. You know, all of this is really important to consider in this time. And the full moons, I don't know about y'all, but full moons can be really powerful times of reflection and realization. And I've definitely experienced that. And I feel like I've definitely already begun to experience that for this full moon. But I think like a Leo full moon, again, like a fire full moon, we think about action. These are some of the hardest full moons to sleep under. I noticed that many, many years ago. But I think the thing about this full moon in Leo is we can really reckon with our egos. And, you know, I talk a lot of shit about the ego, and it's because I had a lot of wounding in my ego, especially when I was younger, but still today to some degree. And I'm working on unpacking that all the time. But, you know, that's my perspective on like why I have a hard relationship with the ego. But of course, one of the things that Leo can remind us of is the power of our egos, like the power of our inner strength and our ability to shine that outward. Because that is really, you know, our ego is like a self-identification, an individuality that we do need. You know, I think in a lot of ways, it can be taken too far. And we see that as a general culture. And the more that I learn about the history of this so-called nation, the easier I understand why we exist the way that we do as a collective of so-called Americans, because we've been like so indoctrinated into individualism, into stepping all over people in order to get what we want. So for me, like I struggle with that fear of being that dude and just like keeping myself in check not to be that guy. But, you know, Leo also reflects like charisma, likability, leadership, and the ability to get people to gather and have fun. Like I think about like that inner Leo in all of us is that person who's like the life of the party. And for me as like a highly sensitive, maybe like slightly agoraphobic desert dweller in a rural area full of conservatives and not that many people that I really connect with, although love my community here. That Leo energy can be like very community building if it's not completely self-serving, which of course is shadow Leo. But I think about strength, you know, and I think about how strength builds us up to take on our deepest fears, to challenge what's in front of us, and to build something better. And I often find myself in those positions as I'm just, you know, trying to learn how to be the best person that I can be, basically, is like, how do I utilize my power? What are the most authentic ways for me to utilize my power to do good in this world? And I've been thinking a lot more about the difference between like being good and doing good, because I, you know, I'm really challenging that construct of like good versus bad as I've been really deep in my own trauma healing journey. I'm really deep into my own Plutonian research and feeling like I'm just like figuring things out constantly, like allowing my belief systems to evolve, allowing myself to be more open to constructive criticism, feedback, and reflection from people who I trust. And that, you know, journey for me, I was thinking about it. I've done a lot of work on myself in the last 5 years. I think that in the last year, you know, it's kind of like a Russian doll. You like start doing all this work on yourself and then you really tackle this one part of like your issues. And then suddenly like another door opens and it's like, okay, so now you're ready to deal with this issue. And I think for me, like the big one that allowed me to step into so much healing growth is that I used to be like, I've talked about this before, I am a recovering defensive person. Like if I would even sense that anyone was criticizing me or questioning me, I would be filled with so much anxiety because I already had this fundamental belief that I was bad for so long. So like, I get it. I see that trauma response in other people all the time. I still have it to some degree. I think like it's kind of natural to feel uncomfortable and anxious when you're being critiqued by someone that you value and care about. But like learning to sit with it was like the biggest gift that I've given myself, because through that I've been able to receive so much amazing feedback from people in my life. And I've been able to grow through that and communicate better, have better relationships with others, and heal a lot. I was thinking about just like where I was 5-6 years ago, and even more so like 10 years ago, you know, and I've just been able to receive. And I really think that's, I'm kind of like going off now, but that's a Queen of Pentacles vibe too. You know, that's a Queen of Pentacles vibe. So I've worked with that archetype a lot. Nothing to do with the astrology of this season, but maybe I'll talk about Queen of Pentacles again, which reminds me, Tarot School for Liberation is open, evergreen registration. And if you don't want to take the whole course, or you already took the whole course when it was live, you can download Demystifying the Court Cards, which is a 80-minute lecture and some worksheets on revolutionizing degendering the court cards from like a anti-capitalist, non-hierarchical perspective. And that was a lot of work for me, a lot of analysis, because again, like I've spent a lot of time breaking down my own gender identity, like doing my own shadow work, looking at the way that like, you know, harmful constructs show up in the way that I show up in the world. So I put a lot of that into, you know, all of my courses. I always say that a lot of my work in the world is really informed and inspired by like my own history of fucking up, you know, like my own history of being like, wow, I did this way. I sure wish I had done this way. That would have been more effective in retrospect. So I digress. I'm going off here, but I guess it's sort of like a Leo full moon vibe, you know, is to just like want to tell our stories, want to explain ourselves, like in a way, not like, you know, not the over explaining of someone being insecure or having a trauma response and being like, I need everyone to understand me, but more like explaining yourself with confidence, like holding the space that you occupy with complete confidence and being able to hold leadership and communication and openness to receive and to give back, because we know that Leos are big givers, big giver energy, I guess. So anyway, that's to say, this is the last podcast I'm doing before Rising Above the Wound closes. It will not open again for registration because this is a class that revolves around the United States Pluto return, which is happening in a few days. Honestly, it's happening on the 20th. I mean, we're totally in it. You know, Pluto's at 27 degrees Capricorn. We're in it. We've been in it. We've been in some degree of it for years, but it's coming to a head in a few days. And, you know, again, like I think one of the lessons of Pluto is that we don't always see results instantly. And we can look at that in the greater perspective of the overculture. I mean, think about it. Like, Reaganomics didn't show itself to be as harmful as it is for a while. You know, like, I think, like, in the beginning, yeah, but, like, we are seeing the effects of NAFTA, Reaganomics, of Jim Crow. You know, like, all these things from our history, we see them play out. But it doesn't happen immediately. It's that arc of the story, the arc of the narrative. So that's the thing about Pluto, is I think, like, at some points in my Plutonian healing journey, I really thought that the Pluto return, or like the Pluto-Saturn conjunction of 2020, the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, those constructs to me, I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen on that day? And I think like I had to kind of like reflect on that. Like, this is an outer planet. It's not a thing that's going to happen on one day. I mean, we'll see what happens on February 20th. It might be something big, you know, but it's more of like looking at where we're at. Looking at where we're at, this is the death cycle of the so-called United States. So, that to say, you've got exactly 2 more weeks to join Rising Above the Wound, a class that I put so much of my blood, sweat, and tears into. There are payment plans available. I am always open to sliding scale, but I just like for people to email me and ask for that instead of like offering on the site. Surviving capitalism as well, and has chronic health issues and a lot of trauma that they're trying to work through because apocalypse is coming and we got to be healed for the revolution. So all that said, I'm really excited to feature this person who's like living in their values, who's doing this really important work, Metzli Alexander. Again, if you enjoy the podcast, check out the Patreon, support the apothecary. You can book a reading, sign up for one of the classes. And please support Metzli, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation. everyone. I'm here today speaking with Metzli Wolf of Revolutionary Mystic. Hi, Metzli. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this, and I'm just really excited to be here with you. Thank you.
Yay, I'm excited to talk with you also. So what, for folks that maybe aren't aware of your work, I just was telling you before we started recording, I've been following your work for a couple of years now, and it's really interesting, like the breadth of things that you offer and what you do and seeing just kind of like you grow as a practitioner. So for folks that aren't aware of your work, do you want to just share a little about who you are, what you do, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Metzli Wolf. I use they, them pronouns. I am a witch. I do a lot of things. And I feel like saying I'm a witch kind of encompasses all of those things, but I am of like a hoodoo lineage. I make all kinds of witchcraft supplies in my Hoodoo Botanica that's online. I'm an astrologer. I'm also a psychic medium, which is maybe one of my favorite things to do is mediumship. And I do a little bit of paranormal investigating. I teach, I speak. And as of lately, I started a wolf sanctuary. And so I am also a multiracial person. I am Black and Indigenous. I am Nde Apache and also Oglala Lakota. And also, you know, Mexica Indigenous, which I have been like kind of honing down in, on like the tribal aspect of that, which is kind of exciting. I feel like I'm getting close to figuring that part out. But I'm also queer, I'm disabled, and I live as a chronically ill person. And I talk a lot about living with PTSD and things like that. Just trying to be out here representing the vast spectrum of existence, you know, living at my various marginalized intersections. So in a nutshell, that's kind of me.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. One thing that I notice is it seems like you have kind of like this strong community practice. And one thing that I was aware of from, you know, beginning is that it seems like you're really good at creating community within your practices. So maybe since you mentioned being a teacher, and I know you're also a tarot deck creator, is it a tarot deck or is it an oracle deck?
It is a tarot deck. Yes.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So maybe if you want to talk a little bit about your work, like as a teacher, the way that you share knowledge, especially with, you know, like you're saying about like the discovery of your different identities and ancestries and how that is for you to like hold space and community.
Yeah. So community is, I mean, it's everything, right? It's ceremony. And I feel like witchcraft in general, even though I consider myself a solo practitioner, I guess, because I live alone and I practice alone, which there's something very communal about practicing witchcraft, and especially like in the role that I hold. One of the many things that I do is the tradition, the hoodoo tradition of setting lights for people, which if you don't know that term, setting lights means that I do spell work for people. And that is a very sacred and intimate way to connect with folks in the community and to be of service. And like you said, I also teach. I teach virtually, and you know, perhaps maybe when or if the pandemic is ever over, I'm also hoping to have in-person workshops here at the Wolf Sanctuary from time to time. But doing so is really important for me, especially because I don't know about you, Karina, but like when I was growing up into the witch that I've become today, because I started practicing at a pretty fairly young age, the teachers, the resources, everything that was available to me was all very white and all very whitewashed. And so I feel like it's really important that there are folks that look like me, or, you know, folks that look different than me, and there's just more representation happening in teaching. And so holding space in that way as a teacher is something I definitely don't take lightly. I love what I do, and I love sharing spirituality and witchcraft with folks in a way that merges some of the very pillar things about me, which kind of are a little bit unique, I think, from a lot of what's out there in the world in terms of spiritual learning, is I really value critical thinking and science in addition to the spiritual aspect of it, and how they are actually really interwoven and not necessarily separate entities. And so a lot of my teaching encompasses very scientific things. Like if you're taking a psychic development class with me, we are absolutely learning about neuroscience too, the hows and whys of this magical phenomena we experience to be psychic ability. And so, you know, it's really fun getting to nerd out all that kind of stuff with folks, and also to walk with each other through our journey together. It's just something that I love doing, and I love sharing about all the things that I'm passionate about, you know. So teaching is very sacred in that way to me. And so is the deck making process. Honestly, it's an interesting thing to be making a tarot deck in a time where there are so many fabulous indie decks out there. I love indie decks. I love indie deck creators. And again, this is kind of mirroring the same thing about teaching, where even still today, like if you walk into any metaphysical shop, any spiritual shop, if they have like a wall of tarot decks or a shelf of tarot decks, you know, I'm willing to bet you that 95% or more of those tarot decks are all very colonial, all very white. They're probably all white illustrated, white authored, white published, things like that. And so it was important for me to create my first tarot deck, because I wanted to, because it sounded like fun. I'm obsessed with tarot decks. But also to do so like as representation, like, hey, we exist and we make decks, and our decks are really awesome, and they're also really important. And especially because like mine has decolonized, like deconstructed some of those like archetypes and symbolism that are embedded within tarot. So being able to do that has been good medicine for me, and I hope it's good medicine for the community when I'm all finished with it and get to share it with y'all. But yeah, that, you know, those are kind of like the things about community and teaching and tarot that I've been blessed to get to experience as of late.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, there are so many new decks. And I know when I was learning about 12 years ago, I just don't feel like there was a lot of options back then. And there wasn't a lot of critical dialogue about appropriation, whitewashing of spirituality. So it's great to see those conversations happening. And I also like, you know, when you bring up being a teacher and the ethics around it, I think about it a lot, because I'm a teacher also, and I'm constantly just like checking myself with that, because I think like for me as a white person, like showing up as a teacher is like something that you have to take really, I think everybody needs to take it seriously, but I think a lot of white folks, like we need to take it
more seriously because we are being backed by like a super oppressive white supremacist system in what we do. So making sure to not align with that as much as we possibly can is really important. So I love kind of, I've seen like you post about and share about just like being in community with some of your students before. And I think that's really cool because there really needs to be that sort of creation of like more than just like someone offering something, but someone like mentoring, you know, as you're offering, actually like mentoring and holding space, mm-hmm. facilitating growth in the people that you're there to serve as well. So I would love to hear from you about, you know, this decision that you made to start this Wolf Sanctuary and, you know, when and why you felt called to do this and what the steps around that were.
Well, you know, I always knew that I wanted to, one day when I grow up, I wanted to live away in nature, in the wilderness. And when I was much younger, the thing that I would often say is like, well, when I grow up, I want to like have a falconry and I want to take in injured birds, which is still something I would like to do. but a few years ago, I want to say it's probably been like 4 years now. I took a trip and this trip totally changed my life. We saved up for a long time and we rented a RV and we flew from California, the San Francisco Bay Area, where I'm from, but I no longer live there. But we flew from there all the way to Nova Scotia, which is like so far east on the, you know, the so-called United States in Canada. It's like even more eastern than like Maine and things like that. And we rented an RV. And we drove the RV all the way across from Nova Scotia to Vancouver, BC. And along the way, I had this like a very sobering reality that I don't know if folks like me truly get to go on vacation. Because everywhere you go is colonized. And, you know, Americans, especially, we have this particular view about Canada. And a lot of it is very accurate. You know, there's a lot of nature. And yes, Canadians are very polite and very nice. And what I also got to remember and experience as I was going across that country was it's also a colony, just like ours. And so, being confronted with all of that right around the time, like just after Trump had been elected here and things like that. And all the alarm bells and in my nervous system were going off and things like that. It was a pretty intense experience and getting to go to really beautiful historical sites and see where First Nations people you know, had these amazing ceremonial spaces and things like that, but seeing it represented in this like imperialistic way reminded me so much of home, reminded me of being here in the United States. And it really, like, that whole time in my life just kind of changed me in a way where it was like, okay, like, I can't just go along with the, you know, the rest of the world. Like I have to do something. And eventually we made it to the Wolf Sanctuary in Banff or near Banff, which is a national park in Alberta. And it's Yemniska Wolf Sanctuary. And we got to take like a guided tour thing where you get to actually go inside of the enclosures and interact with their ambassador wolves, because not all wolves want to interact with people, and actually most of them don't. But when we did, so like we're at this wolf sanctuary and I am like geeked out, excited, like I'm practically like squealing on the inside. Like I am like, this is everything I've been waiting for. Is the entire, like, it was the highlight for me of this trip to Canada, is what I really wanted to do. And when we get inside of the enclosure, the volunteer that was walking us through the tour, you know, she gave us very specific instructions. It was, don't make eye contact with any of the wolves. Please just, you know, like, look at the ground as you make your way to your seat, and then have a seat, sit down. You don't want to be standing. You don't want to be staring down a wolf, all that kind of good stuff. And as we did that, my partner at the time and I were the first two people to have a seat, and like the energy shifted. And I'm not kidding you. I actually have video of it that I usually share about once a year. But the wolves, not even just in the enclosure, it started with the enclosure we were in. They started howling, and it just like went through the entire sanctuary. Before we knew it, like the entire sanctuary, which was a pretty big place, all of the wolves were howling. And you can hear in the video, this volunteer telling us that that's really unusual, that they don't usually do that. So it was quite special for us to get to experience that. And when it happened, it was like akin to, like, for lack of better words, because I speak the colonizer's language, it was like a baptismal. Like I felt like I had been submerged in something sacred, and like the hair was standing up on the backs of my arms and my neck. And both my partner and I were like holding back tears. We're like, oh my God, like we didn't expect that. And then the most bizarre thing happens as that's happening. All of a sudden, this enormous raven swoops down like 6 feet in front of us and lands on the ground, like in front of a wolf, and just kind of like looking at all of us that are sitting there in our seats. And I could just feel the spirits of that land. And I can't tell you like how much it just felt like a calling. And it was like, it felt like, okay, like loud and clear, this is what I'm meant to do. You know, like this had my spirit, like, you know, singing so high. I was probably like trembling. I was so excited to be there, so happy to be there and meet the wolves. And, you know, that's a pretty good cue that, hey, maybe there's something really important here for you. And it was, you know, getting to meet them. The first thing that animals always notice about me is that I can communicate with them on a psychic plane. And so, you know, having like that experience and all that good stuff, like communicating with the wolves while I was there, and learning about why the wolves need our help, why the wolf dogs need sanctuary, all of that good stuff. It really spoke to me on a lot of levels. I could really identify with their story. And I just knew, I was like, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to orient my entire life towards, this is something I've got to do. And then now here we are, you know, like 4 years later.
Wow. That's amazing. I got so emotional hearing that story. I would love it if you wanted to share, and I've learned a lot from you about this and other conservation pages that I'm on their mailing list and follow and stuff, but do you want to share a little for folks that don't know about what's going on with wolves and like the protections that have been removed in the last couple years and why it's important to have a sanctuary?
Yes, I absolutely am happy to share about that. So basically, all of us grew up hearing the big bad wolf story, right? We know about Little Red Riding Hood. We know about the big bad wolf. We also know about the three little pigs, and we know about the wolf that's going to huff and puff and blow their house down. Well, you know, these are all colonial fairy tales that unfortunately have painted this very inaccurate picture of what this beautiful, sacred relative of ours, the wolf, truly is. And in colonialism, like, we anthropocentricize. Essentially, what we do is we center humans and humanness. And in colonial culture, we don't acknowledge or live alongside the rhythm of nature or the interconnectedness, interdependent, you know, ways that nature is. And so we have a very large disconnect between ourselves and animals, and especially animals that have been maligned by our culture, our society, through storytelling and, you know, the silly things like fairy tales and whatnot. And we have to remember, like, who these fairy tales were probably created by and what purpose they served, because honestly, it's caused a lot of harm. And in the last few years, just before Trump left office, he removed the Endangered Species Act protections on a lot of animals, and wolves were one of them. If you want to understand why he did that, well, you know, he's a Republican, and a lot of Republicans are ranchers and raise livestock, and a lot of them are also hunters. And unfortunately, also, a lot of them aren't even just hunters, but they're trophy hunters, which is a very colonial concept. You know, the idea that we would go out and take the life of another being just so we could mount it as a trophy somewhere in our home, you know, is like maybe one of the most vile colonial things I could think about. But so in doing so, you know, removing that protection makes it to where he's appeasing these groups of largely white cisgendered men who are either already voting for him or were maybe on the fence. And then, you know, probably something like that would have pulled them over, you know, to his side of things. And unfortunately, that has led to reversing decades worth of conservation efforts all over Turtle Island, even in places like near Yellowstone and things like that. Like, conservationists and ecologists have worked so hard to restore wolf populations and to reintroduce wolves to places like Yellowstone. And in one fell swoop, Trump removed that protection, and the wolf populations have been devastated so hard. I believe there are under 10 Mexican red wolves that exist in the wild right now. So they are, you know, damn near extinct. And the gray wolf is also being killed in very large numbers. If you have followed my work or, you know, pay attention to conservation efforts or wolves or whatever, you may know that much earlier this year, Idaho signed into action a bill that allowed, or not even allowed, but it called for 90% of the wolf population to be what they call culled, which is a fancy colonial word for murdered. And they removed all hunting limits. So they gave hunters, you know, like, here, kill as many as you want, and we're going to kill 90% of these animals in this state. And, you know, I believe there was about under 2,000 of them at the beginning of the year. And so to remove 90% is like huge, huge, huge. you know, and unfortunately that has a devastating impact on all kinds of other animals, you know, because like I was mentioning before, not only are we interconnected with one another, we're also interdependent. And since we live in an age of climate crisis, things like culling 90% of wolves in a state, it really just kind of adds like fuel to that fire, you know, in addition to the emotional and spiritual scars that it leaves in a place, you know. So yeah, that's kind of like what's happening. There's a lot of other states that are teetering on the same types of bills and policies. A lot of them are like Montana and Wyoming and things like that. And so right now, a lot of us that really care about our planet and our sacred relatives, and particularly wolves and predators and things like that, are really doing a lot of grassroots work to sign the petitions and things and get the attention of the officials, like the Interior Secretary, Deb Haaland, to hopefully get them to, I don't know, listen to the many scientists that say, hey, don't do this. This has devastating, irreversible effects on all kinds of things. Don't do that. And do that and, you know, listen to those folks instead of the ranchers that just have, you know, a bunch of like white tears and hurt feelings because, oh, well, I had a cattle eaten by a pack of wolves last year, you know, and things like that. So, you know, we live in the age of facts versus feelings. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's kind of in a nutshell what the fight is for wolves currently.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, it's really, there aren't words, you know, there's not words when we have a government that is like giving the green light basically for extinction of a species that was here before white Europeans were. And it reminds me, I know this is not at all similar because coyotes are not looking at extinction in this century anyway. But it does, you know, for me, I've been living in the desert for 3 years. Funnily enough, I went to the Pacific Northwest this summer and saw a couple of coyotes and I was like, they're up here too. But down here there's, you know, I felt like I've learned a lot about coexisting being in the desert because my animal companion has been attacked twice by coyotes. And my instant reaction is to be like, I hate coyotes. They're terrible. Like my landmates lost a cat in the middle of the day to a coyote, almost lost another cat, like caught it in the nick of time, basically. And I've had so many other people lose cats and had dogs attacked as well. But then at the same time, it's like, those are just, you know, why is it kind of that, I can't remember the word you use, anthrocentrist. Is that it?
Anthropocentric. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it feels.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. It's like I kind of had to come to terms. Like, if, you know, like I need to protect my dog. I need to make sure she's trained. She's a terrier. She loves chasing coyotes and barking at them. And I have to be vigilant. And pet owners have to be vigilant because coyotes were here first and they are just trying to survive and they're looking for opportunities to survive. And if you give them an opportunity, they're going to take it. And they're beautiful. I love coyotes. I think they're beautiful and interesting and fascinating. And I really don't want them to attack my dog again. But you know, it's really my responsibility. And it's also just like the nature of being on a planet that has other species on it as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and even like as an indigenous person, like from an indigenous perspective, like I feel like I'm a guest here too. And you're right about like our relatives, the coyotes, they are very much so maligned the same way that wolves are. They're regarded as a quote unquote pest animal because predators get a bad rap, unfortunately, you know, but a lot of predators like coyotes and wolves are also keystone species, which means that, you know, when we remove that piece of the food web, all kinds of things like come tumbling down. And so they are that much more important to protect, preserve, and save, and learn to coexist with them. I really like the way that you brought up the issue with the cats and the dog. Because, you know, like I live in the wilderness too. And I, up here in northeastern Washington, I happen to live in an area that very much so, like, the vibe is people hate wolves and probably also coyotes for the same reason. And you're right. It's about our responsibility to be vigilant. I had a woman, I believe I posted a video about it on Instagram the day it happened, because I was like, oh my God, I had this woman, you know, she was like terrified because she knew I was the quote unquote, you know, wolf lady that had arrived in the town. And oh my God, I'm going to start this sanctuary. And she was, you know, just scared because her dog had been attacked by a wolf. And the first thing I asked her was like, well, how did this happen? You know? And she goes to tell me, I'm like, well, you don't have a fence? She's like, well, no. I'm like, okay, well, you know, we do live in the national forest. So, you know, maybe consider putting up a fence. I have a fence where I live. You know, fences are very expensive and not super accessible by any means, but if you're somehow able to source the resources through either collective care or your own personal means, like, it's important that we do so to protect both our domesticated cats and dogs, and it also protects the wolves, you know, because every time one of these incidents happens, it just like reaffirms the same big bad wolf narratives and gives all those, you know, wolf haters out there all the fuel to be like, well, we just don't like them, you know? And same with the coyotes.
Yeah. So with your sanctuary, I'd love to hear a little bit about like how the process is going for you opening that, what you're planning to do, what you've already started doing, and also how people can support your work.
Absolutely. Well, we just moved here about, I think it's been a month and almost a half now. And we moved here. This all started much sooner than I had anticipated, you know, because life and the universe has other plans for us sometimes. I thought it was going to be maybe years. As somebody who struggles with having enough resources, very consistently, I was like, I don't know, like, hopefully, you know, one day in the future, we'll get to this part where we get to start a wolf sanctuary. But, you know, some tragic things happened in my life, and it kind of put me in this situation where I was like, okay, I'm going to turn tragedy into something constructive and healing. And so we were able to crowdsource the resources we needed to get here, to get this property, et cetera, and so forth, to move us, which was a large portion of those resources. Moving out of state is ridiculously expensive. But to go from California all the way to Northern Washington, because I'm like all the way up by the Canadian border, just like 10 miles short of it. So we did all that, and we're here now. And luckily, this property came with a large portion of the property fenced, and fenced in a way that I would have fenced it anyway. I just need to add some things to it. So that's kind of where I'm at in the process right now. Now that I'm mostly unpacked I am adding things to the existing fence. I need to add more dig grates. So there are these barriers that I hammer into the ground along the fence line that keep any animals from digging under the fence. And then I also need to add these like lean-ins that are at the top of the fence that kind of like point inwards. And what that does is it creates a visual barrier, just showing any animals, like, you're not going to be able to jump over this fence. And so that's where I'm at right now. Tomorrow is actually a very exciting day. We get our first rescue, not delivered. I mean, sort of delivered and transported here. Yeah. From Indiana, we get Finn, who's a mid-content wolf dog, which is my very first mid-content wolf dog. He is 42% gray wolf and super adorable. And I'm really excited to welcome him into our pack. So we've got that going on. And right now I'm like fundraising through my Patreon. And through everything that I sell and do in my Hoodoo Botanica and my booking calendar as a psychic, like all on my website, all of that stuff goes towards Black Moon Wolf Sanctuary, which is the name of our wolf sanctuary. And my hope is within the next month or so to get the funds to finish enforcing our fence and create another fenced area for two more wolf dogs that are in urgent need of rescue. Their names are Whisper and Echo, and they're a pair of bonded sisters that were rescued from a backyard breeder. So that's kind of where we're at right now with the wolf sanctuary.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Are there a lot of wolf sanctuaries around the country, or are there a lot of, you know, independent animal sanctuaries in general that you've made contact with or that you know of?
Yes, absolutely. There are wolf sanctuaries all over. And what's wild is they are all full. So unfortunately, just like with cats and dogs, the demand is much higher than like the supply. So like there are so many more wolf dogs that need forever homes and there's just not enough room. Like all the sanctuaries, every email I get from somebody that's looking to rehome a wolf dog or get them to sanctuary has let me know that they've tried everywhere and that everyone's full, and they're just wondering if I have like, you know, one spot available for this wolf dog and things like that. And, you know, it's emotional. It sucks that that's where we're at with our relatives and our companions, you know, because I know dogs and cats, it's the same way, but it's even more so for wolf dogs, because as you can probably imagine, not everybody can take on being a companion and creating a home for a wolf dog. So yeah.
Beautiful. I'm so excited for you. That sounds really amazing. Well, thank you so much. I can't wait. I definitely want to be a supporter of your work and what you're doing. And it is, you know, so much eco grief. I know that you're experiencing it. I'm experiencing it. So many of us are. Like, it's so hard not to get caught up in like a lack of empowerment. Cause I think also, you know, I'm not sure how old you are, but like when I was a kid, like I'm a zennial, like an elder millennial. And mm-hmm. when I was a kid, same. There was a lot. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking we were around the same age. Yeah. And I feel like when I was young, there was all these narratives about like recycle and reuse and you can save the planet. And then like in the last, you know, 10 years, I feel like it's been like, oh, we're fucked because it's corporations. So like we can all reduce and, you know, we all should make our individual impact, but it really is like the corporations are going to continue to get away with everything. And lawmakers are going to continue, like the government itself is so corrupt and white supremacist and colonial, like it's really about like tackling that. And that can feel incredibly disempowering and put people into like a place of despair. And even for me, I am the descendant of colonizers, you know, like I do have ancestors mm-hmm. that were like direct colonizers. So there is like that responsibility for myself. So I just want to like clarify that, speaking as a non-Indigenous person to this land. But anyway, thank you so much for sharing. And yeah, like your story is beautiful and I'm really excited for you. And is there anything else that you feel like you didn't get to talk about or that you wanted to share? Before we end the call today.
Sure. Yeah. I just wanted to say, like, I feel you on the eco grief, especially as a Xennial. I too grew up with the same messages of like, oh, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, and everything will be okay. Yeah. And like, you know, global warming, but it's not really that big of a deal and stuff like that. And then, you know, where I just moved from, I've lived through 3 wildfires, you know, in that experience. And that was a huge awakening of like, oh no, like this is happening and it's happening now and it's happening really fast. And so what I want to say to people is if you're experiencing eco grief, it's valid. It's valid. It's understandable. Like, you know, feel your feelings, get that out there. And I will tell you also, it's so helpful to take those feelings and to express them in a way that is either creative or, you know, gets a message out there or is a direct action, like, you know, like, hey, I went and donated some stuff to my local dog shelter, you know, no kill dog shelter down the road. You know, turns out they really needed more dog food, mm-hmm. things like that. Doing that stuff in response to those, you know, very valid feelings of grief is it's survival and it's ceremony. And I think perhaps if we could do that enough to make it become a culture, then we might have a chance of making some serious, significant change against these corporations and lobbyists and such.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, that really inspires me to do more for the animals in my community. Thank you so much, Metzli. It's an honor to speak with you and to share. I appreciate it, you being on my show.
Aw, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch, where a pledge of $5 or more per month gets you access to extra content and helps support the production of the show. And go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review. You can also check out the website for tarot readings and apothecary and other offerings. Thanks so much, y'all. See you next time.